Chapter 53. Samila Saye. Today is the day we make a god. The crowds are gathering, paying obeisance to me and to the other elect around me and above us, to the Colour Prince himself. All the people are gathering today. A special day, a special victory, but also to commemorate our people's great victory at Oxford and mourn our losses. The Colour Prince wishes to tie all these together in the small folks' minds. I find it terribly uninteresting, so instead I regard the mathematical precision with which I have remade my left hand with blue luxin. No, remade is too grandiose. Augmented. My hand has become superior in most ways to a human hand, but I am a mere mechanist. Perhaps I would have become a creator had not the Guile's War made a warrior of me. It is, however, a masterpiece. Blue luxin is crystalline, solid, hard, nearly unbreakable on one plane, but easy to snap or shatter if pushed from the side. Supplementing the human animal with all its shifting and bending and twisting forms is well-nigh impossible to do without impinging on its functionality. Sheathe your arm in a blue luxin carapace? Easy. And then you sweat. And the sweat and oil gets trapped. The skin softens and, chafed incessantly, peels. Exposed to that sweat and oil and dead skin after a time, infection sets in, then the body attacks itself. Unable to swell, the blood gets cut off. The infection spreads, fever comes, and throughout, incredible pain. It is my hypothesis that much of the madness of colour whites has had nothing to do with luxin. It has been the result of unending pain. The sadly self-inflicted torture of incorporating luxin into one's self imperfectly. Perhaps such madmen are so dangerous they must be put down for the safety of others. But to call madness evil is a grave error. The pre-Lucidonian philosopher said, "Every act intends some good." The damage done by whites has been done through ignorance. One doesn't punish ignorance with death. One fights it with knowledge, not darkness. But light. My companion and I have long talks about this. She isn't real, of course. She is merely a dialectical prop. I picture her as a grown-up version of my niece, Mina, who was murdered at the Great Pyramid, questions my research and we debate. It is the only way for me to have an equal here. It makes me miss the Cromeria. So many fine minds there. Of course, they forbid all this research, but if they could overcome their fears as I have overcome mine. But of course, I know the Colour Prince has people recruiting within the Cromeria. The people here are eager, but they aren't disciplined thinkers. They think being free means being free of the consequences of their actions, free of nature's laws. It is an attitude the Prince has not seen fit to curb. Not yet. Not when he still needs soldiers and drafters to die for him. Later, he promises me, we will work to channel such fervour. Light cannot be chained, but it can be directed, he tells me. He seems to like the phrase, and I can tell he will use it again. Later. After victory, after the first phrase has bought him willing martyrs and power, he will add that second clause to nullify the first, and those fool martyrs will have died only to put a new king with a different title on a new seat in the same place. Thus ever does a tyrant's noose tighten, I suppose. Expanding, building that future speech in his head, he says, all the world is open to the light, but our eyes can only look one way at a time. I see these rhythms, with Mina's help. How nine kings became seven satraps, and how failed attempts at making a high king yielded to a successful attempt to make a prism, and how the prism's power and the satraps was eroded by jealous colours. As a wolf hungers for meat, so a man lusts for power. It is unwise to get between either one and his prize. This is not a condemnation, but a fact, and only a fool allows herself to become the prize. This is the reason why someone else is becoming Mott today, not I, though I stand in the first rank for that honour. Dubious honour, I think. We each get to wear a necklace of what the Colour Prince claims is black luxin. Most likely it's simply a clever illusion, but I find it unsettling. Mina and I have discussed this position for me at some length. She thinks that, oh, more cheering. Everyone else on the podium is applauding. I join them. She thinks that having an overseer would grate on me. I say, what's the difference between having one overseer to direct me to do the Colour Prince's will, or having two overseers to direct me to do the Colour Prince's will? Plus, those who fail the prince directly feel his wrath directly. Dervani Malagos and Jerosh Green fought tooth and nail to be the Atarat, and when the prince made his choice, he gave one godhood, and the other a musket ball in his brain pan. And soon thereafter Dervani had joined Jerosh in death, albeit at Gavin Gile's hand. Godhood is a dangerous business. Still, Mina thinks I will chafe under the rule of a lesser mind. Ramia Corfu is certainly that, though the man is beautiful. One oughtn't discount the power of beauty. It is a change I notice in myself. It has been months since I last took Usef Tep. We'd made love 9 times in that last week before the freeing, knowing it would be our last. We'd even slipped out of the line of the freeing, fooling none, and not trying to fool them either. Human delicacies break down in death's acid gaze. While I had not Usef's daily hunger, by now I would usually feel the lack keenly. Now my libido lies dormant. I look at Ramia's well-proportioned face, and I understand that other women see only boyish charm and willfulness, smouldering good looks. It's not that I don't see it or understand from memory what it will do to others, it's that its effect on me is limited. It matters not. My sole strategy with Ramia Corfu will be to make myself appear to be what I actually am. Indispensable and utterly without ambition. Mina pretends to be content with this, though I think she has more ambitions for me than I do. The Colour Prince is going on and seems to be doing a good job of it. He usually does. Then he gestures to Ramia to stand. Ramia stands with an arrogant grin that I suddenly realize I'm going to really, really hate within the span of, oh, I already hate it. He nods to the rest of us as if we're lucky to be seen with him. My face remains impassive, but some of the others bristle. It's one thing to revel in such a triumph. It's another to act as if you got there because you were smarter than the rest of us. Why him? I know the Colour Prince likes him, but I had assumed it was something to do with the Colour Prince feeling a need to have attractive people around when his own looks had been forever destroyed. The Colour Prince is now a marvel to behold, a wonder, but not remotely beautiful in human terms, and those who've tried to go to his bed have all been rebuffed. The word is that the fire unmanned him, which means the damage must have been severe. It has never been taught officially in the Chromeria, but the uses of Luxin in sex have been explored by drafters from time immemorial. Ramia Corfu, Lord of the Air, come forward, the Colour Prince says. As the young man joins him, the Colour Prince goes on. It is my place as a leader of free men and women to recognize and reward excellence. In your ascension you will bow the knee to no man and no woman but to your prince alone. We establish order not so that we may have lords, we establish lords that we may have order. Ramia Corfu, do you pledge your magic, your sword, your will, and your obedience to me? I so swear, Ramia Corfu says. He gets down on one knee and touches the Colour Prince's foot. Then today I declare the restoration of the old order, the Colour Prince says. It is not my wish to rule, it is only my wish to see a people who rule themselves. Free women, free men. So what authority you have trusted to me, I turn back to you. The white light of the sun is all colours working in concert. Our ancestors, the 9 kings of old, forgot this. They pitted themselves against each other, and in their weakness a heresy came among them. A prism shattered them. We shall not fail as they failed. I have been your Colour Prince, a man only, wounded, made whole with many colours. But today I tell you I have a vision for all of us to be united in freedom under the light. The prisms have split light, have split satrap from satrap, have split us into those who steal and those who are stolen from. We will unite all of us instead, and we will find strength together. 9 gods, 9 kingdoms, and all peoples united under one white king. He holds up a multicoloured arm, blue plates and green seams and Luxin running beneath it all constantly. But a poor white king am I. One day, when we have taken back our kingdoms, I shall remake myself. On the day when you unite the satrapies, I too shall be made whole. My friends, will you serve? Yes, many shout, we will serve. But he quiets them, playing to the critical. Will you serve not me, but this noble ideal? We will. Will you give your all to see the nine kingdoms come again? We will. He goes on, but I stop listening. The rest of it is mere whipping the crowd up. Interesting turn there, making his own healing synonymous with healing the seven satrapies under his banner. Healing with war. With tens of thousands listening, I can't be the only one to find that darkly amusing. Better is when he tells them he's looking for those who will serve mightily, that there's room at the top. The veiled appeal is, serve me and I'll make you powerful, but the very fact that there's a top must mean there's a bottom. Could a statement be more transparently at odds with his talk of all being equal? Regardless, if nothing else, the Colour Prince has given himself a new title. He is now the White King. I seem to remember him swearing at some point that there would be no kings among us. Does no one remember? But through it all, he's left Ramir Corfu on his knees, and the young man is clearly uncomfortable and peeved about it. When the cries of the White King fade, the newly dubbed king steps back to Ramir Corfu. He produces a small ivory box and opens it. He pulls out a many-pointed crystal, holding it between thumb and forefinger. It spins, seemingly of its own volition, scintillating in a thousand shades of heaven. The White King hands the crystal to Ramir. The young man stands. He doesn't move at all for a long moment, but when he does, he looks around at the others on the platform. He looks at the soldiers nearby. He looks at the king. Ramir Corfu's eyes are sapphires lit from within, and crystals race across his skin, breaking as he moves and reforming, renewing from within instantly. A king? Ramir says. What is a king before a god? You have given me the power over the Luxin in your very body. His entire body is sheathed suddenly, in crystalline armor so thick a cannon shot would bounce off. He raises a razor-edged arm as the king's men cry out in alarm. And you have given me an excellent demonstration, the White King says. The blue crystal carapace shatters at Ramir Corfu's neck, and he crumples to the ground as if his strings have been cut. His head rolls free, and as all his blue Luxin armor blows apart into grit, the scent of chalk and blood fills the air. Most of the crowd can't see what decapitated him, but I can. It was the necklace the Colour Prince gave us and commanded us to wear at all times. The so-called Black Luxin pendant has pierced Ramir's neck front to back, tearing through the spine and emerging behind him, and the chain tightened until it cut all the way through his neck, bopping his head off. Or maybe it isn't so-called Black Luxin. Maybe it really is Black Luxin. Maybe I've been studying the wrong colour all this time. Some of us, sadly, are not worthy of trust, the White King says loudly, and such traitors will be winnowed out mercilessly. However, there are in our ranks many more faithful who are true to our cause and who will never betray us, who will serve us all, high or low, to the best of her capabilities, which are great indeed. Oh no. How can I be so late to see it? Samila Saye, heroine of the old wars but a true convert to our ways, Samila Saye, will you serve as Mot, our blue goddess? I stand unsteadily, feeling the weight of the black Luxin crystal about my throat, heavy and corrosive. I bow my head, incapable of speech. Beside the new king, I can imagine Mina. She looks fierce. She looks triumphant. She looks like she was planning this all along.